This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasan with Noel Lim and Kusi Chuang in the studio this morning. We've got a poll running on Twitter right now. Can Pakatan Harapan overcome the current leadership succession issue? About 240 votes in. The majority is at 36% saying no. Let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio. Right now, we're taking a look at higher education, and more specifically private higher education, as the landscape in Malaysia could be vastly different post-COVID-19.
Yeah, so in just looking at some quick numbers here, the Malaysian Association of Private Colleges and Universities, or Mark Koo, the president, Datuk Dr. Paramjit Singh, told the NSD that up to 100 or one-fifth of the 440 private higher education institutions across the country were at risk of closure this year. So it's quite serious. And also sources within the Education Ministry told NSD saying that 49% of these institutions have been making continuous losses over a three-year period since 2016.
Yeah, the MCO has placed enormous strain on private colleges and universities who are facing multiple disruptions to their businesses, including interruption of on-site classes, physical distance SOPs, as well as loss of lucrative international student segment because, well, borders are closed, as well as a loss of local enrollment as SPM and STPM have been essentially derailed for the time being because of the exam schedule there. And these dire financial straits, I think, as you've mentioned, that Noel, could really be an issue for private colleges and universities. And for more on this, we speak to Dr. Jeffrey Williams, professor at the ELM Graduate School at HELP University. He and his team have been conducting studies on the Malaysian private higher education landscape for the past couple of years, which was recently reported in the New Straits Times. Jeffrey, Doctor, thank you so much for joining us this morning. How has the pandemic exacerbated the existing problems within the Malaysian private higher education industry in terms of the business model?
Good morning. I think the main issue is clearly on the number of students that we have and the revenue that is associated with the students. Obviously, the lockdown came at just about the worst time that it could come, which is right in the middle of the March and April intake. So that means that we were not able to get as many students as we would have hoped during that time. Of course, there are some other students, particularly the international students, who weren't able to come onto campus or even to come into the country. And so we lose them as well. So it's really a question of revenues. The revenues are down, and the revenues are associated with the student intake. But then, of course, because we've had the extension of the lockdown, the uncertainty in terms of registering students from the student perspective, the question as to whether they should sign up now or wait and sign up later, whether they want to defer their entry into local universities, or whether they, if they were thinking about going overseas, whether they want to change that view and stay here. All of these uncertainties cause problems for us, as well as the effect of the lockdown on the examinations and the fact that people weren't able to do their exams, and now that the school exams are going to be pushed into next year. All of these things are going to affect the admission process. That's the main impact. Well, there are some minor impacts in terms of costs. I mean, we have to incur some costs in terms of switching to online, but primarily it's the revenue issue. Yeah.
Well, over the past few years, I understand a significant number of universities are, I know, they have been loss-making, and I think you pointed that out too in your study. What is the reason for this? Too many schools, declining birth rates?
No, it's bad management, actually. There is no problem in terms of the number of people wanting to come into universities. It's a very buoyant market. We know with almost complete certainty what the number of potential applicants each year will be. You just look at the number of people who will be leaving school, and we take about 27%, 28% of those people will want to come into higher education. About half of those will come into the private sector. So we know for sure, we can predict for sure what is the level of demand, and there's no end to that. The fact that so many universities have been performing so badly is simply because of bad management, senior level bad management. That's it. There's no other explanation for it.
Well, Dr. Williams, your studies project that as much as, well, more than half of private higher education institutions could go out of business. You know, what kind of conversations are being held in terms of not just the commercial viability of education as a business ongoing, but also in terms of the delivery formats?
Well, let me just clarify. I don't make any particular predictions as to whether these universities will close down or not. my research basically says whether they are financially viable or not. Unfortunately, we have a lot of institutions which aren't financially viable, which continue to run. They run on very low cost base, and they're very much hand-to-mouth, money in, money out sort of organizations. And this grinds down the quality that they are providing, and it grinds down the terms and conditions of the faculty in particular, and the pay to the faculty in particular, and the tenure of the faculty. And all of these things mean that we have institutions which are surviving with very poor financial situations. So what they're focusing on constantly are the financial difficulties, and that takes their eye off the quality issues. And what that means is that the quality is grinding down, and the terms and conditions for faculty is getting worse.
Well, it's obviously no secret, and we all know this in Malaysia, that private education is being pursued by institutions, corporate institutions, not for the learning, not for the benefit of learning, but also but primarily for the pursuit of profit. To what extent do you think this MCO will result in a reset of the system, where the institutions that come out on the other side are much better quality, much better curriculums, and much better syllabuses?
Well, if the predictions from MAPGU are correct, then we should see quite a number of their predictions are based on universities and colleges. My research is only on the universities. But if their predictions are correct, we will see, a large number of colleges which will close because they're simply not able to survive through the period up to it's going to be to the end of the year now. Now, what that should do is to transfer those students into the other institutions. And I hope that the ministry has a plan in place to make sure that that transfer is as smooth as possible. If that's the case, then clearly some of the more successful universities will see their numbers rise because of the transfer from those institutions which don't survive. And that should help them in terms of their financial position. And that hopefully that improvement in terms of the number of students, improvement in terms of the number of the revenue that comes from those students, can be used as an investment in quality. I hope that it will go into an investment in quality. That is a big risk, actually, because unfortunately, that extra revenue may well go into things which are not necessarily focused on quality delivery. Our research showed that a great deal of money is spent on marketing, which has got nothing to do with quality delivery. It's spent on paying off debt. It's spent on paying dividends to shareholders, for example. And that is not necessarily going to deliver better quality. So in the transfer of students from the colleges that close into institutions which are more successful, I hope that the ministry also make it clear that any improvement in the financial situation must be focused on improving quality for the students and improving the terms and conditions, and particularly the pay of the faculty.
Now, Jeffrey, very quickly, what kind of policies could remedy the defects we are in the industry, as we've talked about, in the short to medium term? There are obviously a lot of concerns now. What kind of policy changes could we would you like to see?
Well, I think firstly we have to deal with this issue of the number of institutions, particularly if some are likely to fold. So, I mean, an immediate response is to put in a process of structured merger or for the transfer of students into successful institutions. And, you know, I mean, this can also involve the public sector. There's no reason why public universities cannot adopt or merge with private institutions and provide a for-profit arm of public universities, for example. That would be the first thing. I think the second thing that is really important is to look at the revenue model and to try diversify income for universities, moving away just from tuition fees, because that's what's caused the systemic problems at the moment. If almost all of the income is dependent on tuition fees and the students don't come, the universities are not viable. And I think the third thing is how the higher education system is funded, because currently it's funded primarily through loans from PTPTN, we know last year there was a significant public consultation process because BTPN have recognized very openly and very honestly that the loan system is not sustainable. And it's going to be worse this year, of course, because there is a repayment holiday for students. So there will be 6 months without income. So we need to restructure the finance of higher education, both in the public and the private sector, and move away from a loans-based system or purely loans-based system into a system which involves other sources of financing. And that might include, for example, a graduate tax.
All right, Jeffrey, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Dr. Jeffrey Williams, professor at the ELM Graduate School at Hulp University. Right now, we're going into the 8 a.m. News Bulletin and then the Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.